me to open this round of our international seminar on stochastic differential equations and related topics with the talk of Michael Röckner from the University of Bielefeld. I assume that most of you know Michael Röckner, so an introduction would not really be necessary, but I would like to say some words anyway about the speaker. So Michael Röckner is full professor
Good
at the
afternoon to all of you.
Michael Röckner is full professor at the University of Bielefeld since 1994. He got his doctoral degree in 1984 under the supervision of Alba Verio, and did his habilitation in 87, also in Bielefeld. Among several positions he held, there's a professorship at Purdue University, a professorship at the University of Bonn, Bonn University. He is an outstanding and well-known expert in probability theory, potential theory, partial differential equations, spectral theory, mathematical physics. He has published an enormous number of articles and several monographs. Michael Röckner received many honors and awards. Some of them are the People's Republic of China International Scientific and Technological Cooperation Award, the Award for the International Cooperation of the Chinese Academy of Science. He is a member of the Academia Europaea, a honorary member of the Romanian Academy, a distinguished visiting professor of the Chinese Academy of Science. He obtained the Max Planck Forschungspreis and the Hans Meyer Leibniz Prize of the Federal Ministry of Education and Science. This time, so I hand over to Michael Röckner, and he will speak about the P-Brownian motion and the P-Laplacian. Please.
Yeah, thank you very much for the very kind introduction. And thank you very much that you give me the opportunity about to talk about this work. So it's very recent work. And first of all, I have to apologize to Shige Peng, because it is not G-Brownian motion I'm talking about, but P-Brownian motion. And P is not a function. So P is really P, like LP.
A number.
Okay. Okay, so this is joint work with Viorel Barbu and Marco Rehmeyer. And the main references are written there. So there is this paper on archive, which this is really the content of this. It contains the content of this talk. And then there is a recent lecture notes by Viorel and myself. And then I mentioned these two papers where in SIAM and AOP, where basically the whole thing started, where we realized that the superposition principle can be done in a nonlinear situation and help us with exactly what we are going to do today. Okay, so this is the contents of the talk. So first of all, I'm going to talk about motivation and the long-term program we have in mind, and introduction about the problem. Then I will talk about general nonlinear Fokker-Planck equation and the corresponding McKean-Lassow stochastic differential equations that are in a sense in one-to-one correspondence. Then I will turn to the parabolic P-Laplace equation, so identify it as a nonlinear Fokker-Planck equation, which is not so visible at first sight. Then the corresponding McKean-Lassow equation will be solved. And the last key step is to prove that what we get is a Markov process in the sense of McKean. And then I will talk about one of the main ingredients to prove this Markov property. That's the hardest part of the paper, about what we call restricted linearized uniqueness. So first of all, motivation, long-term program. So I'm sorry about that, that the slides are so packed, but I wanted to have everything, let's say, in one view. So everybody knows the core example of stochastic analysis. On the analytic side, it is the heat equation, and on the probabilistic side, it's Wiener measure and Brownian motion. Okay, so this is the heat equation. The thing to say here, I mean, everybody knows the heat equation. The thing to say here is that X is the variable in which I do the differentiation here on the right-hand side. And Y refers to the initial condition, which is the Dirac measure. So in the sense I write it like this is in the sense, of course, that when T goes to zero, then this probability density, the corresponding probability measure, converges to the Dirac measure weakly. Okay, so then the solution of this heat equation everybody knows is just the classical heat kernel, the Gaussian distribution, you can say. So again, here's the y that refers to the initial condition. And then the corresponding probabilistic object is Wiener measure. We all know it since Wiener 1923. This is the space of all continuous paths in RD starting at y. So then if we take the canonical process, so this is just the evaluation map on this path space, so let's call that WT. So WD of a path is the path evaluated at T. We may look at the image measure of WY under this evaluation map, which I call WT. So in analysis or geometry, it is denoted by star down here for push forward measure, or we say in the probability image measure. This is just the measure that is given by the heat kernel. So it has a density, which is the heat kernel for the heat equation. And of course, the initial condition is a Dirac measure. So that is exactly Dirac measure here. So what we get is just Brownian motion. So this is Brownian motion. This is a standard model. So these are the Wiener measures starting at every point y. And now we get this family of measures on path space, on this path space. So we can look at all paths, and they all sit on the same path space. And therefore, everybody knows this is a standard example of a Markov process in the classical sense, a la Dynkin, Blumenthal, Gittur, and many, many other people. Of course, this has been generalized. This is just a core example to general linear parabolic PDE, more precisely linear Fokker-Planck equations. I will explain this later in more detail. And then on the other side, the Markov processes, and there are really linear Markov processes to distinguish them from the Markov processes of according to McKean, which are non-linear Markov processes. Usually they are not always, but usually described by an SDE. And in this talk, I will only talk about the case when they're described by an SDE. And this one-to-one correspondence was very, very successful in history. I mean, the research goes back to the 60s of last century, and there were really fantastic results by, for instance, taking a problem about a linear Fokker-Planck equation or a parabolic PDE, turn it into a probabilistic problem of the corresponding Markov process, solve it there, and go back to the PDE and vice versa. Some question about Markov processes can be solved analytically. And this two pictures of the same story, the analytic one and the other one, the probabilistic one, is an example, one instance of mathematics that goes between two areas. And I mean, many, many other examples in mathematics. And usually this is really very, very successful and leads to proofs of conjectures and so on, because you look at it from a completely different viewpoint in the corresponding twin theory, if you want. So now let's go to the nonlinear case. So what do we have in the nonlinear case? Well, a core example, I think you would not, let's say, argue about this, is the P-Laplace equation. So it's the same as the Laplace equation. The only thing is we have this additional term, which is not there, p is equal to 2. And this is the parabolic P-Laplace equation. And again, we take initial condition to be Dirac measures. And x is my forward variable, because this is, I would say, if you like this, to compare with the Kolmogorov equation. So this is a forward Kolmogorov equation, not the backward. We do not differentiate it with respect to the initial variable, but the future variable. Start at t, add y, and we look what happens at after time t at x. Okay, so the same thing is true in the nonlinear case, and the corresponding solution is also well known. Explicitly can be written explicitly like this. Is the Barenblatt solution, and this is the formula for it. And see, it's different, quite different from the linear case, from the Gaussian case. So we have again, of course, this difference, but here it is polynomial, and we have c1, and you take the plus part of this function. So that means, in particular, you have a function which is compactly supported in x. So it's not like in the case of Brownian motion, where the heat kernel is strictly positive everywhere. Here it is not the case. Every fixed t and y has a support in a ball. Okay, and now all these constants are related to p and d, so I've written them down here, and not so important what they are really. The only thing is important that you can choose that C1 per constant strictly positive such a way that this is a probability measure for all t. It's a very simple exercise. Just to use the transformation rule, and then you will find this. I mean, that there is such a C1. Okay, so we are really in a completely analogous situation to the linear case, at least on the analytic side. Now, the question is, what about the probabilistic side? Is there a corresponding probabilistic object? And this was an open problem, really. I mean, since the people studied the P-Laplacian, there were many attempts to find such a probabilistic counterpart. And our suggestion now is the following: to do it via the parabolic P-Laplace equation. Look at a stochastic process, more precisely a Markov process, exactly related to it as in the linear case. And here it is. So we have proved that exists a probability measure Py for every y for any initial condition, such that and a stochastic process, and this stochastic process solves this SD here. Come back to it in a moment. And if you look at the push forward again, you look at the one-dimensional time marginal laws as before in the linear case. We had here the Gaussian fundamental solution, and now we have the fundamental solution of the P parabolic P Laplace equation. Okay, so we have found the Markov process such that its time marginal laws are exactly the solutions of the P Laplace equation when started at y. And that's sort of the dream of McKean in his paper, a classical fundamental paper in 1966 in PNAS, where he was exactly suggesting that now come on, guys, we have done it in the linear case. What can we do for such parabolic equation in the nonlinear case? Can we also find Markov processes with one-dimensional marginal laws equal or coinciding with the solution of the corresponding of the parabolic equation? And that's exactly what we have done here. But so, and we prove it's a Markov process. Yeah? So it's a non-linear Markov process. I will give the definition later. And now let's look at the corresponding equation. And this equation is quite a complicated equation, as you can see. And if peak is equal to 2, it goes back to dxt is dwt. So then we are back in the case of the Brownian motion, because here you would have just 0, and here you would have just 0. And it is a sort of, this is a semi-Martingale, of course, and here's the Martingale part. The Martingale part has this diffusion coefficient. So the diffusion coefficient of my process X depends on the law, the time marginal law of the solution. So you could write here law of XT, and you would see in some sense this is an SD, which is doubly nonlinear in XT and also depends nonlinearly on the law. And you take the law and you evaluate it at x, t, and t. No? So it's a Nemitzky-type dependence on the variables. And then this is quite nice, and this is important also in the analysis, that exactly if you call this sigma and you look at sigma square, so the corresponding, let's say, aij and the corresponding operator, which I'll write down in a second, then this appears, the same thing appears in the drift. So this, yeah, so you see this is a scalar valued function. You take the gradient, so you have a grid, a drift. And there's a relation between the drift term and the diffusion term. So that's very important to notice. And again, of course, the initial condition at delta y. And this is usually called the Mikhail-Vlasov equation, where the coefficients also depend on the law of the solutions. And like it's here. Yeah? But it doesn't only depend on the law, it depends on the gradient of the law. And also notice right away that this guy, the U, I told you, is compactly supported. So this is compactly supported. So bad news, it's highly degenerate. Yeah? Zero outside the ball. And we look at the solution on all of RD. Okay? So just it's but it is as I will explain in a moment, the thing you have to do. I mean, this comes out if you study relations between Fokker-Planck equation and corresponding processes, corresponding Markov processes. Okay, and this can be done also in other cases. So our aim, that's sort of the program, is to look at more general nonlinear parabolic PDE, more precisely nonlinear Fokker-Planck equation. I will explain them in a moment, and corresponding nonlinear Markov processes, so described in many cases by McKean-Vlasov SDE. Okay, so now this was the sort of the visions that we have. So basically, we of course, depend a lot on McKean's visions there, yeah, but we realize it now in this case that was of interest for a long time, and this would be our suggestion to solve it. Okay, so then of course everybody knows there is this relation between the heat equation and the Brownian motion for a long time. So we have mentioned here three fundamental papers by Einstein, by von Chmielowski, and by Wiener. I already mentioned. Of course, there's also Bachelet, but he was studying Brownian motion more from the point of view of that it is a martingale, not so much point of view. It's a Markov process. Okay, so there are the question. I formulate it again. So now look at the same situation. So where you replace the Laplace operator by the p-Laplace operator. So here we have divergence gradient u, and here's the divergence of this operator. So at least is it possible to do the same thing if p is bigger than 2? P is less than 2, things become much more irregular, and we do not know, at the moment, we do not know what happens there. And again, this Laplacian divergence gradient, the partial differential operators in R, and this is just the Euclidean norm. So we take the Euclidean norm of the gradient. Okay, so quickly about the literature. I mean, I think the Laplace, the P Laplace operator is one of the probably most studied partial differential operators, where if you put it in Google, you get I don't know how many hits. And you can find many, many, many papers. And it's impossible really to give an overview what was done with the P Laplace operator. Just mention a few here from the PDE point of view. It's already in this classical book by La Licencia Caia Salonica for Alcivar, Camin Vasquez, I mentioned already, and here I mentioned several others, Di Benedetto, Lindquist, and so on. But this list, I mean, these are just books, yeah. So there's lots of papers and also other books. It is just an overview. Then in nonlinear function analysis, appeared already in this very early work by Jean Nonius and Chaim Brésis, where so one point about the P Laplacian is the duality map between W1P and W, sorry, W, yeah, 1P and W minus 1P prime. Yeah, so this is just one. And then there's nonlinear potential theory done with that, with corresponding nonlinear Dirichlet form. So you take the gradient of you take the integral of gradient u to the power pdx, and then it gives you a kind of an energy form, which is p homogeneous. And then started a lot of activities a long time ago already. And again, I only mentioned the famous monographs by Adams, Hedberg, Kainulainen, and Kipling, and Martio, and then a very nice overview of Mengioni in 2018. But there's also applications in physics, climatology. This is this paper by Pellissier, and Ladyshenskaya already said that in 1967 for P Laplacian is a very good model, mathematical model for non-Newtonian fluid dynamics. There's many, many other papers about that that I'm not mentioning here. I should maybe recall that linear potential theory, so in the case p equal to 2, or more generally for more general PDEs and more general linear Markov processes, played really a crucial role, yeah, in developing and exploiting the relation in the Brownian case, but also in more general situations that I mentioned before. And this is for more than 60 years. And I said already, I mean, this translation of the problem from one world into the other, from state space to path space, was very, very successful and has so many monographs about this. And I just mentioned a few here: Dimkin, Strugwara, Dan, Plitanz, Nitschikot, Sharp, Fadlin, Roger Williams, Liggett, Fukushima, Takeda, Kolokoltsov, and also Daniel Struve. Sorry, here's the C missing. It should be like this. Okay, so you might expect that nonlinear potential theory, like the linear potential theory, should play a role to find the P Brownian motion. Like linear potential theory was very, very useful to understand this relation between Brownian motion and heat equation, and also more generally. And there are in this direction two fundamental papers already quite old by Yuval Perez and Sheffield, and then Perez, Schramm, Sheffield, and Wilson, where a deep relation of stochastic gain, the tug of war game with noise, was exploited and also found, yeah, and exploited to find a beautiful probabilistic description of the solution of the Dirichlet problem for the P Laplacian. So a description of the P harmonic function that solves the Dirichlet problem in a bounded domain in RD, Dirichlet problem for the P Laplace, yeah, very celebrated work for the two. But we have now a different approach, and I already explained it on the very first second slide in our archive paper, namely to go via the P parabolic P Laplace equation. Okay, so that's about the history a little bit, but really the literature is huge. Okay, so now let me explain in general the connection between nonlinear Fokker-Planck equation that can be also linear, of course, and Mäkin-Lasov stochastic differential equations. So, okay, so let us look at the probability measures on RD, and then we look at coefficient functions, so functions BI, AI, J, that do not only depend on time and space, so everything is always non-homogeneous from now on. Yeah? So to Markov process, always time non-inhomogeneous Markov processes in general. And there's RD, and it also depends on a measure, PRD, in a measurable way. And that's very important. We only assume measurability. We do not assume that AIJ and BI in the measure dependence are Lipschitz with respect to the weak topology on power PRD, and maybe the Skorod metric there, or we can take the Wasserstand distance. So we do not assume any Lipschitz continuity, even more, not even continuity with respect to what we have the weak topology on PRD. You can think of that this is the AIJ is continuous. No, just measurability. That's very important. Otherwise, you will not get through, with what we are trying to do. Okay, so it takes such two functions, BI, AIJ, and AIJ form a matrix, pointwise symmetric, non-negative definite as usual, and BI will be the components of a drift B. And then we look at such an equation. And that's really a Kolmogorov forward equation. A Fokker-Planck equation is a Kolmogorov forward equation. And I've written it here in the Schwarz distributional sense. So I take the derivative of mu t, and mu t, the solution of such an equation, later on it will be the time marginals of a stochastic process, is first of all a weakly continuous curve in PRD. So these are the solutions. And they should satisfy the following. If I take the derivative with respect to t, I'll explain in a moment what sense. And then I look at Aij Tx mu t times mu t. And then I take the derivatives with respect to Xi and Xj, sum up. And then I take the drift in exactly the same way. So it's very important Aij mu mu. So Bi depending on mu times mu. And then we take the derivative. So now I have to make sense of this. It's kind of an informal way of writing this. So that's a Fokker-Planck equation. And we differentiate in the forward variable. The backward variable would be here a measure, not even because this is not the Dirac measure in general, right? So we cannot even write it properly. Yeah? Okay, so but if we look at the forward equation, we can write it easily, like in this way. And the coefficients depend also on the solution. Okay, but if it doesn't depend on mu two, it's a linear Fokker-Planck equation. So what is the definition of a solution? So let's first look at the definition. So that we take a test function, so an RD. And then the left-hand side, there was a derivative in u t. So what we do, we apply the measure mu t to phi, and then we take the derivative. Yeah? So that's one way of defining such a derivative. But then we also integrate in time to get the rid of the d by dt. So therefore, the left-hand side, and we then take an integral from 0 to t, this is rewritten like this. So that's the left-hand side. Yeah? Apply to a test function and then integrate the time from 0 to t. So then you get this. And on the right-hand side, you do the same. Yeah? You apply the right-hand side to a test function, but then you put the derivatives on the test function because I said this in the sense of Schwarz distributions. So I took derivative, the derivative was on both, for instance, here the BI and the mu. But now I take the derivative onto the test function. So then the equation looks like this. Okay, now it makes perfectly sense. Yeah, and we integrate again after applying it to a test function, and then we integrate over time and then with this equation. So we are looking for a path of probability measures, weakly continuous. So this equation is solved for all phi. That's a nonlinear Fokker-Planck equation. And this mu s depend on this mu s, the unknown is also in the variables, so therefore it's nonlinear. And then we need some conditions so that these integrals make sense, and this is the condition. No, you can imagine that this is the right condition. And we can give ourselves an initial condition. This is this new. I said we integrate for the time from 0 to t, so there should be the initial condition. Okay? And we look at the, in general, it don't have to be probability measures. The solution could be just signed Borel measures on RD of bounded variation. We can also drop bounded variation, but I want to keep it simple here. And important then at the end, so we need that this is measurable. That's all what we need. I mean, we don't even have to talk about the measurability with respect to the measure variable, really. We just need that once I plug in the solution curve, it should be measurable in TNX, then everything is well defined. Okay, so that's a distributional solution. And if it happens to be probability measures for all T and also the initial condition is probability, then we shortly say probability solution. From now on, you can already see here now the Kolmogorov operator. Kolmogorov operator is just here, acting just on test functions. That's enough in space. So we have automatically, excuse me, corresponding Kolmogorov operator whose coefficients depend on the measure. So here and here. Okay. So therefore, I call it L mu. So that's the corresponding Kolmogorov. If we have a Kolmogorov operator, we can write down immediately the corresponding SDE. Okay, so this should be the diffusion part. So we just take a sigma with this property and we plug it here. And then this is just our drift part. So we put it here. So that's the corresponding SDE. Yeah? So now you might say, oh, it's just a moment, the mu t depend, the coefficient depend on mu t. Okay, but if you look at this equation, and you put in any mu t, it's just an ordinary stochastic differential equation. The catch is that in addition, this mu t is also the law of my solution. Okay? So Wt is a d-dimensional Brownian motion, so on some probability space, xt is a continuous process, and such that it's one-dimensional time marginals fulfill this equation. So are equal to the mu t. So that's the connection. So this is just the law of P as before on the very first or second page of my talk. So that's a Mikhail-Vlasov equation. It has two parts. The connection is given by this equation. Yeah, this one. Yeah, but then if you have this, suppose you can solve the Fokker-Planck equation, you have an ordinary differential equation, no worry. Okay. Okay, now let's exploit this. So first of all, obviously the Brownian as a heat equation is a special case. Yeah, the Aij do not depend on mu, they depend on nothing, they're just delta ij. So then you can look at this equation, then this just becomes the Laplacian. Okay, and the Pi is zero, there's no drift. So clearly, this isn't a special case of this, a very simple special case. So it looks a bit ridiculous, but the corresponding Penn-Mikhail-Vlasov would just look like this. And the law, which would be of the solution, is of course the law that Wt is the solution of the heat equation. Okay, this is a measure, but of course, for the heat equation by parabolic regularity, we see immediately, even I've shown you, I mean, even if you start with the Dirac measure, the solution for t positive is absolutely continuous with respect to Lebesgue measure. So this is really the density ut from the very first slide. Okay, so we call this heat equation with a prime because now it's for the mu t, and so because before it was for the u, but it's really the same, so they are the same. Okay, so now let us study more carefully the correspondence between Mikhail-Vlasov equation and nonlinear Fokker-Planck equation. Okay, now let's do the following: we take a Mikhail-Vlasov and we assume we were very clever and we could solve it. So consider that we have these equations, both this one and this one, and suppose we can solve it. We take the solution, and we know that because it's also Mikhail-Vlasov, so that means the mu t is the law of the solution. Yeah? Okay, so we have a solution of the Mikhail-Vlasov equation. You can write it in one equation by just putting the law inside here, but we write it in two equations. Yeah? Okay, so then you simply take a function phi, test function. You compose this function phi with a process. And as usually, as in the linear case, what do you do in order to find the equation of the law, of the time marginal law? You apply Itô's formula and you integrate. That's what I've done here. Yeah? So first of all, I use that the mu t is the time marginal law. So I can put write the left-hand side like this. Yeah, just per transformation rule, this goes into p. Very simple. So now I use Itô's formula. So this is phi of x at zero. I write the omegas here because I integrate afterwards. So now forget about the integration with respect to p. So that's the initial one. Then plus it is the Kolmogorov operator applied to this, plus a Martingale part. Then we integrate out the omega. Martingale part vanishes and we get this equation. Okay, L depends on the law. Who cares? I just use the fact that the McKim-Vlasov equation is a usual SDE once I fix the law. But no. Okay, so we can just do as usual. No different. Okay, and then this, now I go back to this one. Yeah, take just again the image measure of it. And here you can see interchange time and omega integral, and then I replace this xs, which depends on omega, yeah, by a mu integration. So I integrate over dx here, phi of s x dx. And here I just rewrite this. Of course, this doesn't depend on omega, it will not change, will just be the mu s. Okay, and now you see this is exactly the statement that mu t is a distributional solution as I defined it before, yeah, of the corresponding Fokker-Planck equation. Fokker-Planck, yeah? That's it. That's it. So we have shown that if we can solve this, then the solution to it, look at the law of it, solves this. So very simple. So if we can do this, we can always solve this equation. What is very important here, we use, sorry, this, I have to go back. So we can only do this for nice functions phi. So we only get a solution in this distributional sense, nothing more. So if somebody comes and says, okay, I look at my Fokker-Planck equation and I solve it in another sense, or more special sense, then the one-to-one correspondence will be immediately lost. Because now we are going to go backwards. So that is one direction. So the McKim-Vlasov to the nonlinear FPE, but from the nonlinear FPE, we can also solve the McKim-Vlasov equation. How? Okay, so this is in these papers that I mentioned. So assume we have a solution, a probability solution of our Fokker-Planck equation, a general one with Aij's and Pi's as before. And we need two conditions that we have to check. Two conditions about our solution. Of course, the second one is weak continuity. Yeah. So we assume a probability. So this is already in the definition of probability solution. We can just drop it. And we need these integrability conditions. So first of all, the equation must make sense. So then we only need even local integrability in space. And then we need this condition. Now, if you have this condition, then and you look at the McKim-Vlasov equation, and you look at and you assume the mu t is the law, then this is exactly what you need in order to make sense of the stochastic integral. So this part, just you can drop this. This is stronger, yeah. But if this is there still, you have non-explosion of the process, and so on, because mu t is the law. So then there exists a d-dimensional Brownian motion on a stochastic basis. Solve, yeah. In continuous progress paper, as usual, measurable, solving the McKim-Vlasov equation plus the B part. So it also has mu t as a law. So that is another kind of solution of a stochastic equation. Let me go back. So let's assume we solve this with these conditions that everything is nicely integrable. Then I get a solution to this equation, weak solution. But not just with fixed initial condition, but with the fixed mu t, the solution of this equation, as the law. Okay? So it's another way of solving an SDE, or if you formulate it as a Martingale problem, you solve a Martingale problem, you don't do not only fixed initial condition, but the entire time marginal law. So more information, put more information inside. Okay? And that's why it works under very, very general conditions. And this is sort of the way back. So we can go back from nonlinear FPEs to McKim-Vlasov SDE by using this theorem. And I will come back to this theorem later. And I stress again, we only need measurability for this. What is behind is the famous superposition principle from the linear case, which we transfer to the nonlinear case. Okay, let's keep this in mind that there's more or less the same thing. So the Fokker-Planck equation and the Mikhail-Vlasov equation, and this really is, can be formalized really, that is really one-to-one correspondence. If you can solve the Mikhail-Vlasov equation for sufficiently many initial conditions, then it's equivalent to the solution of a Fokker-Planck equation and vice versa. Okay, again about Fokker-Planck equation and also Mikhail-Vlasov equation, the literature is enormous. So I refer to this beautiful book by René and François Delarue. And they mostly assume in the book and also in the literature quoted there that the B and sigma are weakly continuous in the measure variable or even stronger assumptions. But there's also other work that on Mikhail-Vlasov where this is not assumed, so by, for instance, Veretennikov, so on. But no, usually it's difficult to for them to have that also sigma depends on mu in a measurable way. Yeah, so that I haven't seen many papers. And then the case that we are doing is what is called where it's no longer weakly, just measurable, so we can look at this Nemitzky type dependencies, so sometimes also called singular dependence. So this, for instance, the reference is our recent lecture notes with Viorel. And for the Fokker-Planck equation is the old book, not old, joint book with Vladimir Bogachev, Nikrylov, and Stashna Shaposhnikov. And there's one chapter in there also about non-linear Fokker-Planck equation. And then also in this book, you find the book is called something like non-linear Fokker-Planck equation and corresponding Markov flows or something like this. Okay, so now we start with the P Laplace. So the first key step, I told you, we have to identify the parabolic P Laplace equation as a nonlinear Fokker-Planck equation. So the first observation, and that's why I always stress this, that I stressed it several times in this talk already, Aij and Bj are only depending measurably on mu t. So we can look, for instance, at such kind of dependencies. So Aij, Bi depend via a function, so I put tildes there on T and X as before. But then here you have also a function. And this function is given by a functional of U. Okay, so gamma I of U of T of 2x, where U is the density of mu T. So suppose mu T has a density, then we can have dependencies where here's a functional of the density at T and X. So these are the sort of, if gamma 1 is just identities, the U T of X is exactly what is called Nemitzky type, is even more general. And the same here. So now if we realize that because of just the measurability, and at the end it's only important that if you plug in the U, then we have measurability of T of T, measurability in T and X of this guy and this guy, that's all we need. Then you might believe immediately, yeah, this is covered. Huh? Okay, but if we have realized this, then let us rewrite our parabolic P Laplace equation. So I abbreviate PLE in the following way. So first of all, take the P Laplace operator. It's here. Now we rewrite this by the product rule. So that's the same as the gradient of this scalar function and this scalar function. Everybody knows if you take the gradient, it satisfies a product rule. Okay, so this is the same, yeah, is the same as the gradient of this guy, yeah, times u plus the gradient of this guy times this. And that's exactly this part. So now if you do this, I mean, you first of all take the gradient inside onto the u, you have this. Yeah, and then you get another part which is missing on the left-hand side, namely where you put the gradient on this guy times u. Okay, it's just the simple rewriting of this like this. The divergence in front, so that's the first observation. But now you just take the divergence, and what you see here is exactly the drift term coming up, and right and. So let's just look into the next slide. So here we have just divergent of the gradient, this part, it's written here, and divergence gradient is the Laplacian. So now comes the drift part. And then here you just write this. Yeah? Divergence is in front, here's a bracket. So you take divergence of this, you have the divergence of a drift times u. So this is the B. So this is really of the type of our Fokker-Planck equation. Take derivatives of something in front of the u. The something is the aij. Let's go back so you that I can convince you. It's exactly of this type. Yeah? Take the derivative of something depending on mu t, if it's a density depending on u, times u. And also on the derivative, maybe we can allow that. And this is just the divergence of B times this mu t. That's exactly what we have here. We have the divergence. Oops. We have the divergence of B, this is the B, times u. Oh, so this is the B. And the aij are just delta aj times this. So it's a very simple diffusion coefficient, which is just a function. Okay, so it's really parabolic Fokker-Planck equation rewritten. So the P Laplace equation we have rewritten as a Fokker-Planck, non-linear Fokker-Planck equation. And I call this PLE prime because PLE was in the original form. And if I write it as a Fokker-Planck, then I call it E prime. It's the same equation. It's just now for notational convenience. So we are in the business, so we can apply the correspondence of such an equation, a non-linear Fokker-Planck equation, with a corresponding Mecklenburg-Vlasov equation. The Kolmogorov operator, sorry, is you can read off from here. Yeah? You just write it in weak form, and then you find this is the corresponding Kolmogorov equation. Here is the diffusion, so it's very single. Here's the B. But it has a nice form. Now, if you look at the Kolmogorov equation, we have here a square. Yeah, here's the sigma. So we have a root in the Mecklenburg-Vlasov equation. But now we have a square here, aij, not square of aij. So now you see the diffusion part is the same as this function of which you take the gradient to get the drift. So this is very nice about this equation, and its analysis is very, very useful. So now we look at the corresponding Mecklenburg-Vlasov. So this is our drift. So it looks like this. And then we look at the corresponding square, I mean, diffusion part. So then we take a square root of this, is a scalar sigma. So we just get this. And there here we just use our theorem. Theorem says, okay, if we have a solution to the Fokker-Planck equation, the non-linear Fokker-Planck equation, which is written here, then by this theorem I said, and this super non-linear superposition principle, we have a solution of this equation and vice versa by Itô's formula. Yeah? So once we have here, then go back to the non-linear Fokker-Planck. This is trivial, everybody knows. Yeah. So just by Itô formula, you get back this non-linear Fokker-Planck equation. So that's the key step. So now we do the second one. So first of all, I formulate what I just explained. So here's the theorem. So let u be a probability solution, and this is really PLE prime. So is a probability solution of this equation. So the Fokker-Planck equation related to the P parabolic P Laplace equation. So take a probability solution, take an initial condition in the sense of definition one. Yeah, so take it to a corresponding solution. Assume you have it. So far, I haven't solved anything. Yeah, suppose I have it, and I take one that has very nice properties in order to make sense of my Mecklenburg-Vlasov equation and also the Fokker-Planck equation. So I need this condition, and now this is the integrability condition you have seen before. You see, the aij and the b should be integrable before even I allowed here 1 over plus 1 plus x squared or something. But here we have even a stronger, can take a stronger condition. So this is exactly the condition we had in this theorem to go from the Fokker-Planck equation to the Mecklenburg-Vlasov equation. So then that exists by this general theorem. I called it theorem zero, solution to the Mecklenburg-Vlasov equation. This one, just written here. So this is A prime, B prime now is always the one that is related to the parabolic P Laplace equation. Such the initial condition is this, and of course it solves the Mecklenburg-Vlasov, so also the second, namely this one, with law given by the solution to the parabolic P Laplace equation. Okay, and again, this is not exactly the theorem zero is not exactly applicable, but we have to use the method, and the method relies on this superposition principle. And I really should mention it. This is a beautiful paper by Dario Trevisan in EJP 2016, where he did this in the linear case, and here we used it in order to do the nonlinear case. And here the proof is basically, as I indicated, we fix, we linearize it, and then we use the Trevisan result. This is a result which the Trevisan result is a generalization of a result by Figali from 2008. And so then he was able to generalize in such a way that we can actually use it in this situation. Figali would have been too weak in the sense, too strong conditioned on the coefficients. And I repeat again, I mean that we allow this kind of dependence on the law, yeah, on the density of the law in such a in the coefficients via such an operator, which can also be a differential operator. I think that's a completely new thing. This case has been done before in many examples. For instance, you can find it in our book. But to the best of to the coefficients, how I even depend here on the first or even second derivatives of the law density. So, to the best of our knowledge, the relation of such nonlinear FPEs to Machin-Lasoff has not been studied before this paper. I would be grateful if you know a reference paper, people have done that, so we can quote it, but we were not able to find any example in the literature. So now comes the last step. So we did both key steps. We identified the first one. We identified the parabolic P Laplace equation as a nonlinear Fokker-Planck equation. Then we solved the corresponding Machin-Vlasov equation. But now is the question: okay, let's solve it. But where's the Markov process? You know, we're just solving the solving the. Once we have solved the parabolic P Laplace equation, so we have the solution to the Machin-Vlasov equation, then we have a path law. But where's the Markov process? So we have to fix initial conditions, namely Dirac initial conditions, to compare with the Brownian motion. So to obtain the nonlinear Markov process from the solutions of the Machin-Vlasov, if we can solve them, yeah, so just if at the moment, but now it becomes concrete. We need to take into account initial conditions, so we choose Dirac because then we are very lazy. We have a solution to the parabolic P Laplace equation. No, we know this. It's the Baron-Platt solution. Okay, so we impose in the parabolic P Laplace equation also for P two when it is the heat equation that the initial condition is a Dirac, as I said on my second slide. No? Okay, and in the yeah, and then also with the initial condition Dirac, so we put in both equations and the Machin-Vlasov equation and in the parabolic P Laplace equation. In P equal 2, we know what is the solution, is this, I repeat, and in P is bigger than 2, we know the solution and we call it WY. This is because in this paper by beautiful paper by Camin and Vazquez, it was called Y, the Baron-Platt solution. Okay, now we look at the special solutions, yeah, for every Y in RD. Okay, so then we consider the path laws of the corresponding solutions to the Machin-Vlasov equation. Now we have solved the Fokker-Planck equation, namely the parabolic P Laplace equation. The solution is here. And we have done it for every y. Okay, so we can solve the Machin-Vlasov by our general theorem. So we get path space measures, Py. So it's just the path law of the solution to the Machin-Vlasov equation. Okay, and we can really solve it because we can check these conditions for the Baron-Platt solutions. Very, very simple. Once we have it, we have a solution. We check this, and then we solve the Machin-Vlasov. No problem. So this is not a big contribution. Yeah? Contribution is before to understand this connection between nonlinear Fokker-Planck and Machin-Vlasov equation, but there's nothing difficult in this particular case. Okay. So now we have our family of measures, Py. So now, if P is equal to 2, this is just Brownian motion. So if P is equal to 2, then these form a Markov process, as I already said. You see, for instance, Dimkin's book in that sense. There's a family of measures with the Markov property in that sense. I write down the nonlinear Markov process, property in the moment. Now, in this archive paper, we did the case when p is strictly bigger than 2, but we needed a little bit more in order to prove the nonlinear Markov property. So we do not know at the moment what happens if p is just bigger than 2. And this d bigger than the dimension bigger than 2 is only because we were too lazy to write all the proof always in the special case d equal to 1, because then all Sobolev exponents change and so on. And d equal 1 is the easiest case, but it's really formally not contained in the paper in order not to have too much to write. Okay, if d is equal to 1, then the proof has to be modified in this and that way. We wanted to just go through for the higher dimensional case. Okay, we have still our measures. So these are R-space measures from the Begin-Lassow equation corresponding to the parabolic Laplace equation. And it is true they form a nonlinear Markov process in the sense of McKean, which is uniquely determined by the Barenblatt solutions. Okay? So hence, maybe called a P-Brownian motion. There's our P-Brownian motion. But we still have to prove it's a nonlinear Markov process. And that turned out to be really difficult. And you can imagine why, because the corresponding equation, the McKean-Lassow equation, is extremely degenerate. Okay, now to state the latter more precisely, so that this forms a nonlinear Markov process, which will be in the next theorem on the next page, we need some notations. So first of all, we look at the path space of continuous paths in RD, which start at R. So all continuous paths start at R, equipped with the Borel sigma algebra. So then we look at the evaluation mappings. Now I call them PTR. So PTR takes a path starting at R. So this R refers to the starting time. And here, this is the evaluation time. So PRT of a path in there is W of T. Now, the sigma algebra of the past. So we just start at zero and we look at sigma algebra generated by all evaluation maps between from zero to R. Okay, that's the usual sigma algebra of the past. Okay, so now it becomes a bit more complicated. So now what I do, I solve my McKean-Lassow equation and I plug in, so as I told you before, already the law, because I know the law. I solved the Fokker-Planck equation, namely the P parabolic P Laplace equation. So I plug them in, okay, plug them in, and now I try to find the x. And we can do it by our theorem. There is an x like that. So we have the solution. Plug in for this W so that the solution is exactly, has a law exactly what I plugged in. No? Because what I plugged in is the solution of the nonlinear Fokker-Planck equation. Always works if I have this integrability condition, and in particular for the Barenblatt solution. So I can solve this equation, but what I do now, I solve it starting from R. Okay? So I can start it from zero as before, but I can also start it from R. So now I take this solution, start it from R with this law. Because you see, if t is equal to zero, then sorry, dt is equal to R, then this is WYRXT. So that's the initial condition. T is equal to R. So I look at the corresponding solution and I take the corresponding path law. So this is on some probability space, and I look at the corresponding path law. So that's important. So this path law will now become very important in the moment. So this is a path law, and this is a on path which starts in R, at R, because the time R has passed. So I have 0 less than R less than t. So this is my present now, and what is before is the past, and t is the future. So having this, then now I can formulate the Markov property, the nonlinear Markov property. Okay, so I need the equation in the middle. Otherwise, I'm lost. I cannot write it down. And that was also McKean's idea to do it this way. So now I can formulate the theorem under the set assumptions that I already discussed. Take our solutions of the Markov process that we got here in the nonlinear case. So there's a family of measures, and it satisfies the nonlinear Markov property of McKean. So what is it? Okay, so we start at a point y at time zero. Now we look at it after time r and then try to predict what happens at a future time t. Okay, so the left-hand side is the very familiar left-hand side like in the theory of linear Markov processes. Yeah, so we start at zero. Yeah, so we condition on the past, and we look what happens in the future time t. Okay. So now this, in the linear case, can be written with some expectation and so on. Yeah, but now here in the non-linear case, we cannot do this. I will explain in a moment why. So it can be written as a function, and that's decisive, of where I am with my process. If you think of the evaluation map being the corresponding canonical process, it depends on where I am at the present time, okay? And also it depends on the present time, okay? And then it is something. So that's exactly like what Markov property should be it. So this conditional probability should only depend on the present and on the space, on the position where I am in space after time r. Okay, so now I can explain what this means. So here you see I'm looking only starting at r, so I'm looking really in the future, and I say, okay, now this from now on where I am at the present time, and this guy here is simply this conditional measure. So you just wait what happens after time r. So after time r, your Markov process or your path is distributed after time r according to the Baumrad solution. You already know that, how you are distributed. Yeah? So where the particle is in state space. Now that's exactly the law where it is. Okay? And then I condition that to start afresh at that point time z. And now I simply take a regular conditional probability of this, and then I can plug in for the z my position where I'm in. Okay, so let's look at the regular conditional probability of this. It's just a kernel, yeah, from RD again to the space of path, and then there is the y, the starting point, and that is exactly the r, the time that has passed, and then a point in space. And at this point in space, I plug in where I really am with my Markov path, yeah, with my stochastic process at that time. So that was McKean's idea to rewrite Markov property this way. And indeed, in our case, we can prove this. We can prove that our measures Py have this nonlinear Markov property. If you write this down for a linear Markov process, let's say for Brownian motion, then this will exactly reduce to the usual formulation that you're familiar with. So every linear Markov process is, of course, nonlinear Markov process in the sense of McKean. But in this case, we have to do it in a different way. And the reason is, one reason is the following, because why do we call it nonlinear Markov process? This is simply because the Markov process and also the solution to the Fokker-Planck equation, to the parabolic P-Laplace equation, is no longer linear in the initial condition. That makes it necessary to have this kind of formulation. Okay, I repeat, in this situation, we call this PYs that I constructed in this talk from MP, which is a nonlinear Markov process in the sense of McKean. We call that a P-Brownian motion. And that's the only way to do it. If you really want to associate a process to the parabolic P-Laplace equation, you have to do it this way. There's no other way. So it's not artificial. Yes, and again, it is very involved to prove this theorem, and the main ingredient is what we call the linearized uniqueness theorem. The problem is the time is up, so do I have 3 minutes?
Yes, of course, you have.
Okay, so then I can explain it. So we need a restricted linearized uniqueness, and the point is the following. So we look at our coefficients from the parabolic P-Laplace equation. When we plug in, we have plugged in the solution, the Baron-Blatt solution, and you can see here. Here's our exactly our P our parabolic P-Laplace equation. So here the U, take the U equal to W. The W, I explain the delta in a moment. So then it's exactly Laplace gradient of W to the power P minus one. Times take u equal to w divergence, the gradient of this diffusion guy times w. Yeah? So we just give this a name, this one, and I rho delta I call this, so that's the diffusion coefficient. And then remember, in the drift, I have the gradient of the diffusion coefficient. Yeah? So it's of this type. And now I linearize it. So I fix the Baron-Rudd solution and I look at it as an equation in the U. So this is the linearized parabolic Laplace equation, linearized around, if you want, the Baron-Rudd solution. Okay? So it's the linear brother of the nonlinear parabolic Laplace equation. And we do it not at time equal to zero, then it becomes the singular, because then these are, I mean, if you start at zero, then this Baron-Rudd solution is Dirac measure. We wait a little bit of time, delta, and then look at the solution. So we take the Baron-Rudd solution at a strict positive time, delta. And that is the key to it. And then what we have to prove the Markov property, and we need only stick to positive time there, because Markov property, I mean, you prove between two times one is strictly bigger than the other, otherwise it is trivially fulfilled. Yeah, if the future is equal to the present, there's nothing to say. Okay, that's the background of this. Okay, so as I already said, then the W delta is a solution of the linearized Fokker-Planck equation. Yeah, and the Baron-Rudd solution is very nice, has compact support, is in L1, it is in L infinity, it's continuous, whatever you want, but doesn't have very good differentiability properties. You can write down the gradient, huh? And it also makes sense to write down the gradient to the power p minus 2 times gradient. This is, still makes sense. Yeah, still, this is still weakly differentiable if you use the Baron-Rudd solution. So that's okay. Yeah? But still, it is singular with respect to, because it has compact support. Okay, and then we have to prove the following theorem. So we know the Baron-Rudd solution is a solution of the linearized equation. Let us take another one. So let nu t be a probability solution of the linearized, let's say it's now it's a linearized probability p Laplace equation after time delta, start at delta. Take another one, let's call it nu t. So it has the same initial condition at delta. We start at delta now. Yeah, okay. So be such a probability solution, and we assume that this one is less than the Baron-Rudd solution, up to a constant. Okay, so then we can prove they're equal. So this is okay. This is not much of a uniqueness result. You take one solution that you know, yeah, because the Baron-Rudd solution solves the nonlinear equation, it solves the linear one if I linearize around it. So this is a solution. You take another one, okay, but there's a very strong assumption that you make here. So I'm not so surprised that they're equal. So believe me, it's extremely hard to prove this, even for this case, for a smaller one. And now you say, how can you get from this anything? Yeah, and if you write down the, if you want to prove the Markov property, then you do it as in the linear case by induction. Now you take more and more finite dimensional distribution, and then you make an induction about how many times you take to get to the full measure. Yeah? So start with T1, T2, and so on, and then you look at the corresponding laws, and you have to do an induction step at some stage. And in this induction step, you exactly need this to show that then the induction goes through. So that's the technical point. The geometric point is maybe easier to understand. So if you look at the W delta and you look at the cone, the convex cone of all solutions after time delta of the linearized P Laplace equation, you look at all of them, yeah, and then this statement that there's none which is smaller to a constant than the W delta means that W delta is an extreme point in that convex set of solutions. So it's exactly what we have to prove. We have to prove for any given time delta, and look at the Baron-Rudd solution of our parabolic P Laplace equation, it is an extreme point in the set of all possible solutions with this initial condition. And if you know the paper by Stuck and Yeo, a very old paper, 1980, about Martinger problems, and which are not well posed, there is a similar idea on path space, but this was not useful for us. But it was reminiscent to me because I knew this paper from my student's time, and so there is a relation to something in the literature. There. So the externality is a very, very important property to have such kind of a statement that we have here. Okay, but now I should stop, and I thank you very, very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, and we thank you very much for this very nice talk.